Another week, another Signal to Noise, DC Signal to Noise. I'm John Harreth, news director for Farm Journal, and of course the star of the show, Jim Wiesmeyer, who's the Washington analyst for Pro Farmer. And Jim, checking in a little early this week. You got to hit the road tomorrow.
Yes, I've got a family reunion of all the cousins in the St. Louis, Illinois area. I'm looking forward to it, and also to playing poker with my family. I usually lose.
You're headed to Cardinal Country?
I'm heading to Cardinal Country, yeah. I don't think there's a Cubs fan amongst them.
Well, good. Good. Or a Nationals fan, probably.
No.
Well, drink some Fitzes for me while you're there, and have a good time in St. Louis. All right. Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty of this week, separating the signal from the noise for agriculture in D.C. And, Jim, this week let's start with China, because I think there's a story here that ag isn't paying enough attention to, that there's a whole lot of signal in. And that is the news this week that the U.S. actually lured a Chinese intelligence officer to Belgium expressly to arrest that officer and charge him with espionage for stealing trade secrets from U.S. aviation companies. Jim, this is really a shot across the bow at the Chinese in the midst of this whole trade war, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there could be more to come. Now, the coming trial is going to be at the federal court in Cincinnati. I think that's where the individual is at now. And there's another conspirator in there. And the U.S. probably has a few more cases. Now, the importance of this, in my judgment, it could well be eventually linked to a potential upcoming meeting in late November, early December between Trump and China's leader Xi Jinping in Argentina at the G20 confab. The Wall Street Journal broke the news today that the Trump administration is potentially setting up that meeting, spearheaded by Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow. But what's interesting, it could well include a former grandson of, former President Richard Nixon. And you know whose trip in China, in 72, led to diplomatic relations between the U.S. and China. Now, why do I link these? Because
Whoever it is, tell them to go away.
Yeah, I know.
You're doing important things now.
Why I link these two items is because if these things increase, they can only be settled, diplomatically between the two leaders of the country. And so, you hate to call this good news, but however, this shows the seriousness that this country is putting on the thievery of intellectual property, business decisions, cyber espionage, etc., in the case of China. And don't think for a minute that we don't do some of that ourselves. So this could lead to a whole host of top-level agenda items when the two country leaders hopefully meet at the G20 confab.
Well, and a couple of things that are unique about this. One, it's not unusual for the U.S. to accuse China of spying and stealing intellectual property. It is unusual to actually get someone in custody, because usually they, by the time they're identified and charged, they're back in China, we can't get our hands on them. It's very unusual that we were able to lure someone to Belgium, a country that would agree to then extradite that person to the United States and face justice on this.
Oh, absolutely. The signal there is that this will go to court. Now, it's going to be curious to see if it ever comes to the light of day in court, because the U.S. will have to release additional information. China does not want their strategies unveiled in an open U.S. court. So therein lies a potential negotiations, in my personal judgment. So this is big news that could be linked to the whole host of trade issues as well.
Well, and the other big key in this is a person who is directly tied to the Chinese government. It's not someone coming from a Chinese company like we've seen in the ag industry. This is somebody tied to the government.
Oh, absolutely. He's the head of the Ministry of State Security, I believe, and deputy division director in the spy agency there. Yeah, this is big. Yeah, there's no other way around it. And I don't think the traders, not only in agriculture, but economic, traders have linked these two things that I'm trying to do right now.
And, okay, so we've got, I mean, this is a big card for President Trump to play. I mean, this gives him some advantage, particularly here at home, in bolstering support for the actions that he's taking against China. But at the same time, this is not being received well in China. So what is the net gain or loss in trying to resolve issues with China with this move?
Well, I think the signals that I would tell the listeners to look out for is what official comments from here on China makes about this. Usually it's very low-key and behind the scenes, but we're going to see. And we're going to see how Trump, who doesn't shy away from any issues, as we well know, comments about this. What's been, if you will he put on this? What will Secretary of State Mike Pompeo say about this? That's where I'm going to take some of my cues. And, of course, the traditional China watchers that we have.
Well, and in addition, I guess, watching whether or not they are able to schedule some talks at the G20.
If we get the confirmation of that. And with that, the Chinese, I know, even the Wall Street Journal even said a key official from China will be along with Xi, and that's his key economic spokesman. Mm. So, that is very, very good news on that. But I think China will elevate this meeting if they hear from U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer about it, because this really has the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin stamp on it, as well as Kudlow's stamp. They really want to see the more trade aggressors in the Trump administration, back this deal. And that would be Lighthizer, Navarro, people like that.
But as you've said before, the Chinese don't typically respond to being pushed in a direction. They need to find some way that it looks like they're winning out of this. So how do we get from this point to some sort of resolution that gives the appearance of a win for the Chinese government?
Well, I wouldn't be shocked if they come up with a U.S. spy. That typically happens a lot. So any American going over to China should be very careful. You see how that happens in North Korea. Well, this thing's going to be expedited if that potentially happens in China. So then there could be a trade, et cetera. I don't know for sure whether this will happen, but in the history of these things, that's what typically occurs.
All right. Well, we will keep watching and see if we find more signal in that, but a lot of signal this week in that trade negotiation and trade back and forth with China. Moving on, Jim, to E15. We got the announcement this week. EPA made the initial announcement that they got a directive from the Trump White House to move forward on implementing a rule for a year-round availability of 15% ethanol blends. Then President Trump talked about it kind of briefly, really, in his remarks in Western Iowa this week. But really, that's just the beginning, isn't it?
Well, that's the beginning. And he talked about it briefly because, this is stuff to a general audience would make their ears hurt, So I think he put the best spin on it he possibly could, but it didn't take the opponents very long to say or to threaten that they were going to take it to court because they don't think that the EPA has legislative authority or legal authority to even do this, and they're even citing the former EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, saying that to a farm group while he was in office. And this is why a number of lawmakers, including Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, keeps on saying, this be done from Congress, and that would codify it. So, yes, I think we have some time to to have this thing wind its way, not only through the public comment period, which there should be on this, but also to see whether or not Congress can get the votes to codify this. I have my doubts that that would occur. Plus, we're seeing some of the RINs reform too. They proposed making changes to those RINs, and that's the credits program.
Right.
They want refiners to prove the biofuel blending requirements quarterly instead of annually, and they're seeking to limit how long companies other than refiners and importers can hold RINs to limit market speculation. And that may be the win-win that Trump was looking for relative to a pro-ethanol stance, and also to give something to the crude oil industry. Both sides don't like what was announced, which probably means that it wasn't a bad decision.
Yeah, but really, the notion of controlling who holds RINs, the renewable identification numbers, and for how long, that really is not a huge negative for the biofuels industry, is it?
It shouldn't be. That's why you haven't seen the ethanol industry come out with their, to be frank, typical negative reaction on any changes, for the renewable, fuel standard program. This was about the best, I think, that they could have received in order to give anything to the crude oil industry.
Of course, the deadline on this is next June, because E15 can be used in winter months under the current rules. We know how Washington operates on deadlines. You said that it's questionable whether or not we could get a legislative fix, even though that may be what's necessary in what comes out of this. In the meantime, we've got an election, November 6th. How does or does even the outcome of that election, the mix of the House in particular, impact the odds of getting a legislative fix done?
Well, we have to see who's going to control, both chambers, and to see to what degree. If the Democrats regain control of the House by just a few votes, you're going to have still animosity between the two parties, because they're just one election away from regaining power back. But I would look for some possibilities in the lame duck session of Congress. Now, I don't mean E15. Perhaps as a trading bait it could. Because if the Republican leaders truly think that they're going to lose control of the House, they're going to stack as much to be done in that lame duck session of Congress as they possibly can. And that will include the farm bill, spending matters, funding the wall, and I think a tax extender bill that could possibly give us a retroactive extension to the lapsed biodiesel tax incentive. Well, now that's interesting. If that's the case, then that brings biofuels into the bargaining chip arena. And that's where you could come through the back door for those people wanting an extension to the biodiesel tax incentive, around $1 a gallon. That's a big incentive. You could have a trade-off to also include codifying year-round E15, but you're going to probably have to give something to the crude oil industry. I'm not going to rule out this negotiation happening during the lame duck session, John.
But given the rank animosity that lingers after the Kavanaugh hearing, one, is there enough unity in the Republican Party to just ram through what they want, or is the Republican Party fairly splintered after that? And two, is there so much animosity that things are going to be in gridlock until the next Congress is sworn in?
Again, I think it depends on the final election results, but you had a Democratic leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, this week saying there could be a compromise on a possible deal with funding the U.S. border wall. Now, he had to talk to other Democrats. So that was an eye-opener in this town. That was a signal heard by many of us. Now, whether it's noise, it depends on how Schumer deals with the Democratic caucus and other members, whether they want a deal. But, he'll link it in to the legislation shielding the immigrants who came to the country illegally as children. They're known as Dreamers. So, no, I would say there's at least a possibility to have greater than expected legislative topics, some of which are hot topics, done during the lame duck session, because frankly, neither party wants to have these as holdover issues going into the new Congress. So I think that that would up the odds that at least some of these things could at least be addressed during the lame duck session after November 6th elections.
Well, that's interesting. You think it's actually going to be more, not less, after we get through this election?
I think it could be. I think, again, my caveat, my cover, my prediction is I want to see the actual results. But, you know, that's why you have to keep listening to this program.
That's right. All right. Well, we did have some action this week on WRDA, Water Resources Development Act. What does ag need to know about what was in this bill that's headed to the president's desk?
Oh, it's very good news for ag. You know, more than 60% of grain exports out of this country rely on the waterway system. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation, and they clearly back the bill. You're going to have authorization of funding. It authorizes a little over $6 billion for construction of 12 new Army Corps of Engineers projects, and it authorizes a lot of local water, hydropower programs, et cetera, 65 new projects, over $4 billion for state drinking water revolving loan fund programs. But the Water Resources Development Act title in the underlying bill, WRDA, authorizes just shy of $4 billion in Fed funds for those 12 cores, you know, dredging, flood protection, and other projects. And then that's combined with about $5.6 billion from non-federal funding shares are added. So we're talking big bucks here. And this is what the industry needed so they could plan expedited regulatory procedures now. This is very good news for a critical infrastructure needs of American agriculture, you know, the waterway system. And the groups representing them were gaga over the results. They're saying the towboat operators, freight shippers, ports, and labor and conservation groups were all on board to this inland waterways system legislation.
Now, does this include funding for the lock and dam improvements that the corn growers and the unions the towboat operators have been pushing for?
It authorizes. Now, the appropriation.
Now, we've been there before.
Yeah. Oh, yes. But now, this was, when you looked at the, it was overwhelming, votes for this. So I think it's almost a done deal. You hate to say that with anything in Congress, but I think it is. Now, some of it includes the enhanced funding for the deepening of harbors and things like that, but usually it's an authorization bill appropriators have to deliver, but I think this was the holy grail that they were waiting for. They had to have the underlying authorization to go the next step, and I think they're going to get it.
And as you noted, overwhelming authorization, so should be overwhelming support for the funding, as well as assuming it's not tied with something that's unpalatable.
I agree.
All right. Well, moving on to the Fed. President Trump this week has been pretty vocal in pushing back against the Fed. The Fed indicating that they plan to continue slowly raising interest rates. The president doesn't like that notion. Jim, what's at stake for agriculture in this fight?
Well, that's Trump's all noise on this one. I have to call it like I see it on this one, because you go back when he was running for president, he called the low interest rate strategy on the part of the Fed pumping it up for Obama to have at least a tepid economy. So he railed against when the interest rates are low. Now as president, he's going to rail against the Fed when they're increasing. They're by no means high yet, even though we've had 30-year home loan rates go to 8-year highs today at 5%. He's positioning himself, because you've seen stump speech after stump speech. The U.S. economy is on a roll. It's never been better. Well, it has been a little better than it is now. And he talks about the equities market. We're clearly what looks like to be in a corrective mode with the almost 1,000-point drop this week. So I think it's a covering himself aspect. But Mnuchin, his Treasury Secretary, said they have no problems with the Fed's strategy. So they had to cover themselves on Trump's very aggressive comments yesterday that he thought the Fed was crazy. That was his words, not mine, for increasing interest rates.
Well, but quite frankly, they have to, one, to make sure to hold inflation in check, but two, they need some wiggle room in case they do need to use that tool later on.
Absolutely. And now you've got your true yields going up on alternative investments. I mean, I'd move some money into a three-year bond at over 4%. You know, that wasn't too bad from what it's been.
Pretty good compared to nothing.
Absolutely. So there are some upsides to this for people on somewhat fixed income. So it's not all negative news. But markets need to breathe. I think if Chip Flory was on the program, this corrections are – now, you don't like to go through them if you have money in the 401ks, et cetera. But markets need to breathe. It looked like we went up too far too fast in September, and that's the market getting a little nervous that was getting ahead of itself. And Octobers never are usually that good for, stock market on the equities. And boy, it's showing it so far.
All right. Well, Jim, let's wrap up with our obligatory talk of the Farm Bill, which is still expired and still waiting for a 2018 version to move forward. You mentioned earlier you think that could be accelerated in a lame duck session along with a bunch of other issues. But what are you hearing out of the negotiators on this farm bill? Is there anything moving forward? Are we any closer to a resolution on the whole host of outstanding issues?
Well, we're making progress, and those were the exact words that Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts, Republican from Kansas, used this week. He said, we're making progress. We are closing out titles. Now, he didn't say which ones. The most pressing issues are, as we've said many times, the food stamps language, the work requirement, and some of the Title I issues that we talked about in the last Signal to Noise, podcast. And I've heard
if people missed that, I encourage you to go back and listen to the details in that Title I discussion. There's a lot of great detail there, Jim. Sorry about that.
That's okay. And I've heard there's some progress on this, but the sources aren't talking, which means that's probably the case. They're not revealing much. So I know finishing the farm bill will be one of the top priorities for at least the Republican leadership in Congress after elections. They said it this week. So the will is going to be there. Again, it depends on the tenor of the Democratic leaders in the House and Senate. What do they say and how do they say it after the results are known? So I still think it's going to be done in the lame duck session because neither party should want to have this battle go on in a new Congress where the underlying bill would have to be reintroduced. You'd have to go through the committee process. You'd have to go through the floor votes, controversial amendments all over again. Trust me, neither side really wants to do that.
We've talked at length about the 39 orphans that don't have baseline funding. But you're really not hearing anything about any short-term fix for them.
No. Perdue has been quiet on that one. I think the most interesting thing he has said so far this week is that the upbeat news we got on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement could lower future payments relative to the Trump Tariff 8 payments. Now, that was an interesting one. He didn't say by how much, et cetera, et cetera. That signaled to me that by the end of the year, remember, we're going to get another announcement in early December on additional payments and if they're going to be changed, the structure, etc. But that signals to me that I would up the odds that the Trump administration will pull back the metals tariffs that we put on Canada and Mexico. And if that's the case, those two countries would pull back their retaliatory tariffs on a host of U.S. products, including agriculture, pork, corn, dairy, amongst others. So that could be good news as we head into the new year.
That could be, and as the Secretary indicated, could directly impact the rates that are paid out in the second round of those tariff relief payments. And just a little bit of clarification on there, Jim. I know a lot of people have been confused a little bit by the Secretary's remarks, thinking that they may have indicated a change to the rates that were already announced, and I don't believe that's the case. He's talking about any new payments that would be announced in that December round, correct?
Absolutely, you are correct. And this is why, one of the reasons why they pay on only 50% of proven 2018 production, so they could have the flexibility to alter additional, if any, additional payments, which there will be. We just don't know the method, and we don't know the rates for the second tranche.
Well, and do you think, and again, this will be just strictly your speculation, but do you think they will look at altering the rates, or do you think they will just add say another 25% of production on top of the 50% that was already announced?
Well, I think it could be a combination. Plus, I think they're seriously looking about expanding the number of commodities that have been impacted. I wrote cynically after what he said, what Purdue said, that what, are they going to adjust the corn payment to half a bushel? You know, I think that they're seriously going to look at the methodology again, because a number of groups said that their payment rate was way too low to begin with. But number two, it didn't cover all the commodities that have been negatively impacted. It's a tough hurdle for USDA to go through, but that's what you get into when you get into any government program. Who gets it and who doesn't, and how do they get it?
All right. Well, Jim, as we move into the new week next week, where are you going to be watching for signal?
Well, as you initially said, U.S.-China relations, because we got surprising news today from the Wall Street Journal. We're going to have to see if we can get some follow-up information out of Lighthizer, Navarro, etc. Will we have any comments on U.S.-China relations above and beyond the Cold War II-type comments that we had last week from Vice President Mike Pence? So I'm looking really at U.S.-China news, because now that we know the updated supply and demand information that we got from USDA today, it wasn't nearly as negative as the traders thought. So they missed another report for both corn and soybeans. It went the opposite direction of what they thought for both of those commodities.
Yeah, which was a welcome change today.
That's a welcome change, yeah. So we're going to look at the demand side. Brazil is really getting out of their exportable soybeans. We're going to look for updated news out of Russia regarding whether or not we increase the odds that sooner or later they'll put a halt on their exports of wheat, etc. So now we're moving to the demand side of the equation, and from Congress, we're going to look at those U.S.-China relations.
Well, in fact, you had China, the pork industry in China, announcing that they're looking at lowering their protein requirements in their feed because of the availability of U.S. soybeans.
Yeah, but you have to do what you got to do when you're looking at a law. If this thing's going to go on for years, plural, they're going to have to take steps like that. And that's where you would have long-term negative implications to the U.S.-China trade war.
All right. Well, Jim, have fun at that reunion this weekend. And then where are you off to after that?
I'm to Charleston, South Carolina this month to a crop insurance agents meeting. I'm going out to Arizona for a farm managers and rural appraisers meeting. I'm going to Champaign, Illinois for an Illinois farm credit meeting all this month. So look for me at your places.
And if you don't see Jim there, where can they find you, Jim, to get you to come and speak for their
group? My last name at gmail.com, W-I-E. S is in Sam, E-M-E-Y-E-R at gmail.com.
Well, as always, Jim, thanks for separating signal from the noise in D.C. for us this week.
Anytime, John.
That's Jim Wiesmeyer, Washington, D.C. analyst for Pro Farmer, and I'm John Harris, news director for Farm Journal. That's this week's D.C. Signal to Noise.